हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2. Then this is discussing on, what verse is this? Verse 6 and 7. So then we have here, then the point being made, therefore one does not have to develop knowledge and renunciation separately from bhakti. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, unless one renders devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Vasudeva, one cannot possibly become completely detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-37. So it's making the point that you can't actually get out of karma and jnana without bhakti. So that means that you don't require knowledge and renunciation to take up bhakti, right? Because sometimes it'd be thought, no, but unless you're pious, you're good. That generally will happen. You know, some can come up with the idea that, you know, only those who are more pious and all that, they can take up devotional service. But actually, the piety that's there is that they're looking for something, like Artha is looking for how to get beyond the emotional difficulties of the world. Artarti then is looking for how to get beyond the, you know, lack of physical facilities. Jigyasu is wanting to know how to get, you know, beyond the lack of gyan or knowledge. And Jnani is then how to surrender to God. I'm in my position, how to make take that step to actually surrender to the Lord and that. So that's what it requires. It doesn't require anything else. Then in performance of bhakti, then naturally the recommended activities that are there, they will produce the suitable knowledge and renunciation on their own, because the holy name himself, then he reveals all these things. See, because when you purify the heart, in other words, some of the more when there's a more purified condition, can learn more knowledge. Someone in a more purified condition can be more renounced, like we see in the universe. That you go up, there's greater power than what we have here in the Antariksha, but they don't necessarily have God consciousness. So it's limited. They can just have a little bit more facility because they will, you know, be a little more austere, a little bit more like this, but it doesn't elevate them beyond that position. But to go to Swarga, then they have to have greater knowledge and greater detachment. Even though they have greater material facility, they have to also be greater, more detached, because otherwise then, you know, there'll be problems, like we see with Narad Muni as the son of a maidservant. No, the life before the son of a maidservant, when he was the Gandharva, then he, because of his great renunciation in his previous life, he had the ability to keep 50 Gandharva girls entertained, you know, on a consistent way. It's not that he did it once and that's it, and then everybody, but he just talked about it forever. No, he was able to do that. But the problem is that even though the demigod's position is that of having greater material facility, they have to also have proper knowledge and proper detachment to maintain it. So because he wasn't, they were doing Harinam Samkirtan. And instead of being absorbed in the name, to nicely do the thing, but nicely chant to please the Lord, or at least out of the duty that this is what one's supposed to do. You know, this is just a proper activity that is expected. Then he was, you know, singing and dancing and moving in such a way to keep these girls entertained. And so the demigods got upset. No, we're chanting Vishnu's name for doing, you know, Harinam Sankirtan to please the Lord. And you're just, you know, trying to use the occasion to please these girls. So they cursed him that he'd be a Shudra. So then he came down and took birth as the son of the maidservant. So one can see is that to move up higher in consciousness, you have to have this greater knowledge and renunciation. So that's where we think that having more knowledge and more renunciation will elevate us. Or you want to get to, you know, to Satyaloka, then you have to have even greater knowledge and renunciation than that. Because up to Indra, then there's the idea of sense gratification is an important part of your program. You know, it's a conscious part of your activities. Well, when you go above the heavenly planets, the Satyaloka, then in those four planetary systems, then you see is that they go up higher and higher on knowledge and detachment. So then the lower one, then the jhana, what is it? Mahar Loka, then... Yeah, Mahar, John. Mahar, that's for the Prajapatis, because they're householders and they're populating the universe, so they perform their duties there, you know, as Brahmins, and do everything very nicely, but live in a very simple environment. Then Jana will be above that, then Tapa, then we see that's where all the celibates are, you know, like the four Kumaras and all these other great personalities, very renounced, you know, very powerful. Then you have Brahma's planet, you know, as Satya. That there, then all the yogis and everything that's above that Brahman understanding. So and worshippers of Hiranyagarbha, you know, worshippers of the universal form. Then they're situated up there, so they have the greatest. The personified Vedas are there. So this idea of the knowledge and detachment, then is the greatest there. So it elevates you within the material sphere. Or even up to liberation, you know, means the liberation you can attain without relationship with the Lord. So up to Mahakalapura, you may liberate yourself up to there. But then you see is that means you have knowledge of the absolute, you have detachment from everything in the material world. But it can't take you any further than that because your knowledge of the absolute is just the eternalness of the absolute and the, you know, all encompassing consciousness and the all pervasiveness of the Lord, these impersonal qualities. But one doesn't have the personal understanding of the Lord, right? So the amount of knowledge you have is very little. That's all the farther you can get with your material consciousness. And detach from anything on the material platform, engaging the senses and everything. Problem comes is that the soul by nature is personal and has senses. So now even that highest platform you can get of liberation from the material entanglement, then, you know, merging into the Brahman existence won't satisfy the soul because the soul is a person. The soul has form. The soul has senses. Senses means there's action, right? And that action has to be based on proper understanding. So then you're going to have that the living entities that are there, their knowledge is incomplete. So that means the material process can only take you up to a certain level. Karma and Gyan can only take you up to a certain level. Karma can only take you up to the heavenly planets. It can't even take you up to the Maharjana Tapan Satyalokas, let alone liberation, right? In other words, that platform from which they can be spiritually absorbed all the time, karma can't take you there. So there's nothing from karma that will get you there. And jnana, it can only take you up to the point where you understand that you're not the body or the soul, but you don't actually know the supreme soul. So that will then, that has its limitations. So the point is here, unless one renders devotional service on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, one cannot possibly, not, oh, well, under these conditions, yes. No, one cannot possibly become completely detached from this material world, nor can he possibly manifest real knowledge. So you can't actually get detached, and you can't actually have real knowledge, because real knowledge is about your relationship with the Lord. And real detachment from this material world is you don't need to engage your senses in the activities of this world. You can engage your senses in the activities of the spiritual world, on the spiritual platform. Because you can say, well, no, the impersonalists, they merge into Brahman, they're not engaging their senses. But how long do they do that? Right? I mean, from our angle, it seems to be unlimited time, but from those who are there, it's just going to be a very short time. Right? Very, very short time. Like how long can you just sit there and do nothing? Like even the Buddhists, they sit there and stare at their candle or wall. They can only do that 7 hours. In fact, 7 hours is the maximum they're expected to do that. They don't expect to do beyond. You know, if you do 7 hours, that's really good. I'm sure the new people do it much less. So 7 hours, like how long is that, right? So 7 hours, you know, will be, you know, you take 3/4 of a second. How much does 3/4 of a second go into 7 hours? So 3/4 of a second, how many of them to get a minute, and that times 60, that times seven is how many lifetimes of Brahma you're going to be there. But it's still only 7 hours for you. And then you're back. Because you haven't given up the idea to engage the senses. You've given it up to engage in the material world, but you haven't given up the idea that you're going to enjoy by being on that position. So the sense that I'm the controller and enjoyer remains. So only bhakti can take you beyond I'm the controller and enjoyer. It's the only thing that can take you beyond the karana sharir. Right? The stula and the linga sharir, you can get beyond. Well, the linga not, but the stula sharir, linga is still there. But to get beyond the karana sharir, they can't get beyond that. So that means by bhakti only you can get beyond that. That means bhakti is self-sufficient in knowledge and detachment. So therefore, the activities of bhakti, hearing and chanting about the Lord, engaging your senses exclusively in the service of the Lord, that is all you require. That's the only knowledge and detachment you require. You don't require anything else. Other things, you know, can be supportive in that they're in pursuance of that, but it's not that that's what's giving it. It's because you're chanting Hare Krishna and, let's say, fasting. Therefore, you're getting the detachments from the holy name. It's just that you've shown the effort and the interest to become detached by doing the fasting. It's not that the fasting is producing it. Yes, Jim.
Hey, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So, what really defines that someone is doing bhakti? Because, of course, there are the nine aspects, but they can be done in so many different mentalities. Ravanam, and they all can be just done also with complete karmakandic mentality, or even less than that. So what defines that it's really bhakti?
It means the verse that Rupa Goswami gives, anyabhilashita sunyam, right? Jnana karmadya navitam anukulyena krishnanushilanam krishna bhaktir uttama. That verse defines it. So it means acting on that platform, that there's no karma and jnana, you're performing activities that are favorable to Krishna, right? So in other words, I'm performing activities that are favorable to Krishna. That's the first thing, is you're doing the activities that Krishna would find pleasing, right? Now, as you're mentioning, you would have so many mentalities. So then the next step is you're doing it to please Krishna, right? I may be doing the activities that are pleasing to Krishna, but I may not be doing it to please Krishna. Like I'm leading the kirtan, but I'm like we saw there with Narad Muni as the Gandharva, he's singing kirtan, which is an activity that's favorable to the Lord. But his mentality wasn't to please the Lord. His mentality was to please those 50 Gandharva girls. Right? So then that's there. And so then that shows that there's a mix. He's doing devotional service, but it's mixed. And then we say, therefore, what is it that makes it favorable to Krishna is no karma gyan. So in other words, you have the activities that are recommended and the mentality that's free from karma and gyan, and it's just to please Krishna. Right? So that's what you're trying to do. So Baladev Vidyabhushan points out that anyavilas sita, the ita that's in there, that means pure devotion, anyavilas, that pure devotional service, and that activities that are in pursuance of pure devotional service, that's then what's called bhakti, right? It's just that you're in the beginning stage of sadhana bhakti, then you move into, rag bhakti, and then you move into prema bhakti. So you're performing the activities that are recommended, that the acharyas themselves are doing, they recommend, the scriptures are recommending, Krishna is recommending. So that's what you're engaged in. Right, so then that becomes how you situate yourself. So that's what body, mind, and words are engaged in. But at the same time, it's what's the consciousness, because body, mind, and words means it's all about. It's you're engaging in the activities about Krishna, but it also then in here includes the consciousness that it has to be to please Krishna. So that brings us to the pure devotional service. So below pure devotional service, there may be mixed. So we may be doing the recommended activities to please Krishna, but at the same time, we're also looking for something for ourselves, right? Because we're coming from the conditioned platform. It's natural that one's going to do that. So that's why the practice is there. You keep doing those activities that are recommended, and you try to come up to the standard of what's, the recommended mentality that's there. And then with time, then you start to more and more you do things that are, it's about Krishna. And so that gains the volume, because it said that whatever you do, then the mind goes back to those things that you've done, right? Whatever you do, then you get the desire to do what you've done more, right? So if you do devotional activities, you gain the desire to do more devotional activities. We do material activities, you gain the desire to do more material activities. So that's why you always want to see the spiritual activities are more prominent than the material. That will be the advantage of the Madhyama. And that will be the weak part of the Kanista, because they tend to do more material than spiritual. So if they're not careful, then they can get distracted by those. But the power of devotional service purifies the heart, where one comes to the point where one gives up these attachments, becomes steady, and gains that knowledge about one's, Krishna and one's relationship with him. And then one becomes situated in the Madhyama platform, and one continues to move forward until you gain the taste. Once you get taste, then very quickly you start to just want to do those activities that give the taste. And then you could become attached to that taste. And then that brings you to bhava, right? And then bhava, by practicing that and the association of devotees continuing, then that brings you to prema. So that's then the process of how it moves through, right? So you're going to start wherever you start with whatever attachments you have, but because bhakti is so powerful, we see here is unless you're doing devotional service, you can't become completely detached or manifest real knowledge. So it's the devotional activity that's taking you forward. Now your willingness to take part in the activity, it's because fasting, let's say on Ekadasi, is recommended, that you do that to please Krishna. That's the bhakti, right? It's not that you fasted. That's what makes you go forward, is that you want to do that for Krishna, or you want to do that because it's recommended. It's favorable for Krishna. It's favorable for Krishna. It's a favorable activity. Then naturally with time, then it's favorable to Krishna. But if we think it's no, because I fasted, because I'm austere, that's why I'm advancing. That's the point of this. No, it's not. It's the other way around, because even the material can't become perfect without the spiritual, without devotional service. So it's the form is used, because what happens is you have those forms in the spiritual world, they're doing those things to please Krishna, right? But then what happens is when you leave the spiritual platform and function on the material platform, then you're going to find that the soul is going to want to do the same activities, right? This living entity wants to be Krishna and be the controller and enjoyer. It means we want to be the controller and enjoyer of the spiritual realm and all the activities that Krishna does in the spiritual realm, right? So therefore, that's reflected in the material world without Krishna. So you have the activities that go on there. Krishna's sleeping at night. He's getting up in the morning. You know, he's taking his bath. He's doing some duties, and now that he's taking breakfast, he's condemning his other duties in the day. He's playing with his friends. He's interacting with his parents. You know, he's doing all those things, but we want to do all that without Krishna. So those are the activities that are here. Now, because Krishna's removed, now the devotional service and doing that to please Krishna is gone. So now it's just we could say, we'll call it devotion here. He's devoted to his duties, he's devoted to his knowledge, you know, he's very detached, you know, so he's, you know, in that way, he's very saintly. We may say that about mundane people, but they're doing that because it's an identity that they relate to, that I am detached, so they can relate to that, or, you know, these kind of activities. So it's not that they're necessarily doing that for devotional service. They can do it, but it takes on the form of elements of bhakti, because without bhakti, they won't function. You cannot advance in your knowledge. Let's say you're studying in the college. It's because you're devoted to your studies, you know, devoted to following the teacher, you know, and what they say and all that. That's what makes it that you move forward. That bhakti that's there, that's what makes it happen. It's not that, yes, I'm just such a fabulous person that just by me wanting it, I'm automatically a PhD because I'm so fabulous. No, it's because you devote yourself to it. That's why it works. And you see the ones that devote themselves the most, they go the farthest. And if you say no, but there are people who, you know, without even much effort, they put in very little effort, and they pass the exams and they know what to say and they get the degrees, but then how successful are they with it after that? Because they're just working on that they devoted in previous life, so they have this life, they can gain knowledge easily. But if they don't apply it this life, how long will that karma from past life run before it runs out? And they haven't devoted themselves this life, so they have no new good karma in knowledge to function with. So at some point, then they'll lose that position, right? So it's only by devotion they're getting knowledge, you know, or the detachments, because that devotion to being austere, being simple, being these things that, oh yes, this is a good thing, I'm devoted to that, I do it. So it's it's devotional service, because Krishna is knowledge. Krishna is renunciation. With the six opulences, they're his. Right? They're his opulences. So you're devoted to those, but you're devoted to those without Krishna. Therefore, you only get knowledge and detachment. But if you're devoted to Krishna, for Krishna's pleasure, the knowledge and detachment are simply help service. It means subservient to bhakti. They assist in bhakti. Right? It's just like, I have a good frying pan and I have a good spoon. Therefore, I'm cooking very nicely. But the point is if I'm not trying to cook properly, that spoon and that pan can't help me. If I don't know how to cook, it doesn't matter that my frying pan is gold plated, I still can't cook. But if I cook nicely, now I can take full advantage of the pan. So therefore you have the top chef and you give him the top pan. He can take full advantage and you see the glory of that pan manifesting. So it's because of his cooking ability that the pan becomes glorious, not the other way around. So therefore, karma and jnana and this knowledge and detachment only become glorious because of their connection to bhakti. Bhakti makes them glorious, and there is no other way about it. We will say, no, but in the real world, where's this real world we're talking about? Where is it? You know, we use the term, yes, in the real world for people who are in an illusion within the illusion, right? They think that, oh, but I felt like this, therefore it'll happen. No, you have to actually do something, right? It's only through Abhideya that you get activity. So actual Abhideya is bhakti. And the reflection of the Abhideya is when you're performing activities that look like Abhideya, but they're not for Krishna, right? That's the material. Now, when we take up devotional service, then there may be the mix. We may be devoted to doing, yeah, I'm a hard worker and I'm studious and all that. That's an material identity. So you may apply it in Krishna's service, and because you're studying things connected to Krishna, doing activities connected to Krishna, then they're being engaged in Krishna's service, and the bhakti is making them glorious. So therefore, yes, you know, you say, yes, he's very austere, he's very studious and all that, and so therefore he's advancing very nicely. But it's because of the power of bhakti that he's advancing, not otherwise. So it's using them in Krishna's service. It's not the other way around. If we're talking about it the other way around, we're either saying that to talk to somebody who's completely looking at it from a mundane platform, and you have to wake them up from the illusion to just the illusion, right? You know, in other words, when you have illusion on illusion, that's a problem. Right? You know, it's just like, let us say I go to an amusement park. The amusement park's an illusion on the world around us. Now, if we're in illusion to think the amusement park is the real world, you have to wake up from that at some point. Right? Then you can deal properly there. So it may be used as a technique to wake somebody up from that. But the real point is this: no, the real world is in the spiritual world. This isn't the real, this is the reflection. But if we're talking about something that's not even in the reflection and saying, that's real, no, that's not. The reflection is real. But the reflection is real because it's the reflection of the actual real. In other words, we're simply taking the reflection and distorting it and then saying, no, this distortion, that's the real thing. So basically, the process of going from Shraddha to Prema is removing all that illusion and bringing us to Prema. So it's bhakti and the association, and bhakti and the association of devotees that takes us through. But in so doing, we engage our conditioning in Krishna's service, we purify, and then we come up to the standards. So at some point, it reverses that I'm doing it because it pleases Krishna rather than it should be done. And maybe I'm doing it because it should be done, because by doing this, it'll elevate us to spiritual life, and I'm doing that to please Krishna. So it eventually gets to Krishna. So that's what Baladeva Vibhushan is talking about. It's in pursuance of. I may be doing it by something connected to my conditioning, but it's in pursuance of Krishna. So therefore, it takes on that quality. And so the less steps that there is between your service and pleasing Krishna, you know, that you don't have other things you're trying to accomplish, then the quicker it goes. That's why in the beginning, it'll be a little more slow. And as you advance, it gets quicker. So it's like a parabolic curve. It starts out kind of more flat, and then it goes up almost straight. So that's the whole point, is as it goes, it compounds. So whatever, you have some devotion, what you've kind of, that devotion you had yesterday, you're doing devotion today. It's today's devotion with the devotion of yesterday. So it's compounded. And then you add that, and it keeps going until it becomes pure devotion. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, Maharaj, still like, let's say like in book distribution, the self-assessment is quite trustable, that when one gives up all the result desires and just do it for the Krishna, is the most blissful. But for the everyday activity, what is the, how much we can trust for the self-assessment? Because any devotee would say, this is for Krishna, doesn't matter what and which mentality it's done. Do we need a kind of a, you mentioned those bodhisattvas, but do we need kind of a, it's activity, missionary aim, and the spiritual master is assessing that? Or how can we, on everyday life, in the activity, not so obvious like direct preaching, to know that we are pleasing Krishna? Because easily we just self cheating. and we are not able to assess ourselves.
Yeah, that's funny. Self cheat. You know, how you say fully independently, we cheat ourselves. We don't need any help from anybody else like that. So that's the whole idea of the Association of Devotees. That's why a society then is recommended, because in that society, then you have others that can do. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that's the basis. So it always has to be based on Shastra. So that'll be the basis. And then we see is what does the Guru say, and then how do the sadhus help us understand what Guru said, like that, or Guru's giving example from, you know, the sadhus before the previous acharyas, like this. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastras are the basis. So yes, we should be self-analyzing ourselves for how much we know. That's the process of manana. So in manana means we've heard, you know, our doubts, you know, as much as, you know, we understood, are removed. And so then we are trying to apply that. But our understanding or realization may, or practice may not be so developed. So then, you know, we're doing the best we can for the knowledge and understanding that we have. But then that's why in the Association of Devotees, then others can point out things that aren't actually, you know, strong enough, you know, could stand to have improvement, right? That improvement could be there. So that's why then you have both. Plus also you're reading. So you're reading from Srila Prabhupada's books. And then doing, you start to see, because Prabhupada's explaining, you know, the process, the standard, the goals. And then we can also off that judge, okay, is what I'm doing, is it in line with that? And then others, then you have there. So between oneself, between reading, you know, and hearing and that, and then, you know, others' example and how they do things, and their instruction and help, between all that together, then you can see that it works. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Is that good?
Yeah. It comes all the time clearer and clearer. There's still like one aspect, I don't know if I can formulate it, that depends on what kind of association one goes. If one goes to visit the temple, then any activity, it doesn't matter what is like, if you are Kshatriya yourself, but any activity, what they comment is good. It's just that if you mop the floor and do any assistant work and like that, it's if you go to the association for the Brahmanas, then they see it's the most productive. As any activity which gives direct donation, even it would be on the GPC level ordered, that's the one which is highly recommended. So it's a little difficult to, shall we still kind of, you said Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Yeah, well, maybe that says that it has to be a real saint, because only the association, what normally was considered the highest and the highest, just that we are like on the geographical area of some other devotees. But I have seen many times as spoiled and misdirected somebody's devotion. Like I spoke with one sannyasi in Mayapur. He said nowadays the institutes, how would I say, the results in many places is just that they are just spoiling devotees, but they are still giving advices as a devotee, but how trustable they are, it's another thing. So I'm trying to, well, one sense, I think the reply when I'm explaining is that there has to be real saint, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Otherwise, just to be or the devotees may just give an oppose, how would I say, direction.
Yes. So that's why, I mean, in the Kali Yuga, for the preaching missions, you always have a founder acharya. Because there is so many, you know, the shastras are there and the sadhus are there, but how to properly understand and appreciate, that's then the founder Acharya brings together all the different instructions. Like one Acharya is focusing on one aspect, another's on another because of particular situations there. The founder Acharya brings those all together in one process, in one understanding. Because otherwise, sometimes devotees may think that, oh, well, this Acharya says this and that Acharya says that. So, you know, it's contradictory or it's complicated or this or that. When it's no, it's that's why the founder Acharya shows you what's the essence that's there. Detail may be different. Just like you can say, someone who knows cooking, I explain one recipe and then I explain a different recipe. So someone who doesn't know cooking, they'll go, oh, this contradictory. In this one, you said put the ghee and spices in first and then put in all the ingredients. But in this one, you said put in the ingredients first and then only at the very end put in the ghee and spices. But for someone who knows how to cook, it's just a matter of, you know, what technique you're using at what time for what preparation. So cooking, it's the same principles. It's just which one you apply where. So there's no contradiction. So they're just explaining different features. And so by each Acharya bringing out certain features, then the founder Acharya brings those all together into one package that can now be used for the length of the mission. So Prabhupada said his books will be, you know, there for 10,000 years. You know, this mission will be going for 10,000. And then after that, it'll dissipate. You know, the rest of Kali Yuga will come on and, you know, because, you know, after a while, everybody gets really tired of being so tall and everything and having such a variety of foodstuffs and other things like that. And, you know, they're looking forward to being 3 foot tall and, you know, only having each other to eat, you know, so like that. So you have to get on, you know, with business because Krishna fulfills all desires. So therefore, after 10,000 years, then the golden age will be finished and then it'll start to go down from there. So that means is that for these 10,000 years, how Prabhupada's presented it. So that's the whole point. You judge. How is it in line with what Prabhupada says? That's how you judge. You know, so if what they say is in line with what Prabhupada says, then it's great. You know, and they may have some angle on or some realization or some explanation or detail to make help you understand what Prabhupada says. Then that's great. But if what they're saying is not in line with that, then that means it's either we don't understand how it's in line, or, you know, by discussing you find out, no, they don't understand themselves. Because the point is you have the direct activities of devotional service. But those direct activities have been given by Krishna and been given to us by Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas, right? You know, that's already been defined there is that, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, associating with devotees, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, worshiping the deities and living in the Dham, these five, you know, and all other activities that are mentioned of the 64 are all varieties of application of those five, or are preliminary activities or favorable activities to situate us nicely in those five. So then everything has to be in line with that. So any kind of institutional element has to be how is promoting these five activities. You know, because I mean, it's not that there isn't what do you call it? You know, out of the nine processes, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, there is not, you know, there's not bureaucratization. You know, it's not one of the nine processes. It's not even the tenth, you know, the unspoken one. It's that, no, these things are there to assist, just like a kitchen is there to assist cooking. If the kitchen doesn't assist cooking, how is it useful as a kitchen? Right? If I have a kitchen and it's so nice and everything, but I go there and find out that there's no gas, how can I cook? Or there's no ingredients, right? Or the refrigerator's there, but it's not plugged in. How does that help? How is it a good kitchen? It can't help cooking. So in other words, a kitchen is as good as it helps cooking. That's the gold standard to tell, not, oh, it's got this pan and this tabletop and this kind of shelving and this kind of hinge and this kind of spoon, so therefore it's a first class kitchen. No, it only becomes first class when you use it for cooking. If it's first class and no one cooks in it, is it actually first class? So that's the whole point. You know? So that's the thing, is that it has to be used. But the point is even using has to be used in Krishna's service. That's the point. So you have the first illusion is just, I have it, therefore I'm perfect. No, it's only when you cook in your kitchen, then that you can say that's perfect. Okay, so I'm cooking. Now I'm cooking in my kitchen, so I'm perfect. No, it's unless you cook for Krishna, it's not actually perfect. Right? So one is it becomes perfect and then actually perfect. So that's the point. You don't get real knowledge. So it's not real knowledge or real renunciation until it's connected to Krishna. So there is the form, that's the reflection. So in other words, you have the original, then you have the reflection, then you have the distortion of the reflection. So people nowadays are working on this distortion, because the original will be Vedic. The Vedic culture will be the original reflection of the original item, right? Now we go away from the Vedic, it becomes distorted. And how it gets distorted? Well, there's basically, you know, 8 million, you know, and most of the 400,000 forms of distortion. You know, how a cat looks at the world, right? The cat's sitting in your house as it's the lord of the house, and you're the servants, and you're there to take care. Is that the reality? Right? No. So that's like that's the point, is it's not like that. But that's how they think. Right? So one has to appreciate that there's the reality of what the reflection actually is and what the reflection can do, because in the reflection, yes, that's the arm, that's the head, that's the nose, you know, this is your elbow. You know, those things are there in the reflection. You can say, no, but, you know, any part of the body can be, you know, anything else, you know, I want to call it this and that. No, only Krishna can do that. For us, an elbow's an elbow. That's the way it is. You know? So yeah. You know, if you think, no, my elbow is the main thing, so that's why you have some animals that if they want to get down and lower their head to the ground, they got to go down on their elbows. Right? Because they overemphasize the importance of their elbows and don't understand, well, you know, like that. You know, so okay, then use your elbows. You know? Everybody else is just pick it up and bring it to the mouth. No, you have to get on your elbows and get down. You know, so yeah. So we have to appreciate that the original is what the Vedas are talking about. And then if you come up with a distortion of that and try to present that as superior, oh no, but it's modern age, things are changing and all, but that's just a distortion of an illusion. You know, it's like the lake, the water is what do you call it? Smooth. And so the tree looks perfectly like a tree in the water. And then you move the water and it ripples and you say, oh, see, it's changed. We can't look at it in the same way and everything like that. Stop rippling the water and then it looks normal. But the point is what you say is the branch. What you say is the trunk, what you say is the leaf, what you say is the flower, what you say is the fruit. That is what it is, because it comes from the original. You can't say is that the fruit's actually the trunk and everything like that, because without the fruit, then there's no tree, so the fruit is the real tree and this and that. You can have your philosophies, but the point is no, there's the trunk. So one has to appreciate is that there is an absolute truth. That is the actual standard. Then within that absolute truth, the expansions of the energies of the Lord, then you get the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, by which now you can then see what's the mechanics of how the Lord's energy functions. Right? Because they are simply expansions of Him. They're His energy. And we can say, "Is no, I can do whatever I want." No, you have to follow. It does what it does. You can't do that. I can't take the vegetables and just put them on my plate on the table and say they're going to cook there. No, I have to put it in the pot. on the stove, on the fire, then it'll cook. So it doesn't matter what you say. It's what's the reality. The reality, the real world is, it's Krishna's laws. That's what we're pointing out as the real world. We make the mistake to think that what's going on here is real. No, that's an illusion. That's why in the Bhagavatam, you see, it's the first verse is talking about the material world, though it appears to be real because it's a reflection of the spiritual. It appears to be real and it has Krishna's laws in it. That's the what makes it appear real. But because we're not doing it in connection with Krishna, that's what's unreal. So in other words, since it's Krishna's energy and Krishna, to not use it connected with him, that's an illusion. It is him. You know, it's like if I grab somebody's foot and think I'm going to use this foot however I like without considering the person, that's an illusion. Even I'm taking the foot and putting it on the ground and going like this, hey, yes, we're moving, making progress. Like that, you know, and the person's going, yeah, what's going on here? But it's not real. Even though you're dealing, it means the material energy exists, it's there, but are dealing with it. So that's where you come in, where on the materialist, or the, let's say the practical person saying, oh, but that's not the real world doesn't work like that. They think it's because of their perspective and what they do that makes it real. It's Krishna's laws that make it real. So they are referring to the aspect that's real, the laws that are there, and you have to follow the laws of the world. But where the illusion still remains is that unless it's connected to Krishna, it doesn't become actually real. So you want to be doing real things to please Krishna. So if I'm doing things that aren't real, I point out, no, it has to be real. And you have to use that for Krishna. And if I don't understand real and unreal, I say, you do this for Krishna. Then without understanding real and unreal, I'm already engaged on the transcendental platform. That's why anybody can be engaged in devotional service. They can chant the holy name. They can take prasad. You know, they can take darshan of the deities. You know, like this, they can do these activities. Even they have no knowledge and no detachment, they make advancement because bhakti is independent. It's about Krishna. Then you add with time that maturity, Krishna reveals himself, then things go even nicer. Like that, it adds. So ultimately, then one has to see it in line with the founder, Charya, because he says what's actually going on here in a way that we can do. So you have to see is, do the instructions that others say, are they in line with what Prabhupada says? And even you're bringing in things from the acharyas, is it in line with what Prabhupada's saying? That's how you can tell if it's real or not. Just that it's institutional, that's that's not enough. Right? You know, it's the temple car, but unless you drive it to temple programs, how is it the temple car? Right? Does that make sense?
Very much, Maharaj. It's like,
okay,
maybe if I feel like kind of that the temples often, I mean, that's considered in one sense like the highest place for worship, but then many times one sees that, a number of times or some cases one sees that they are not doing the, like you gave the example, cooking like it should be, that basically not anymore almost doing what they are supposed to do, and then not also ready to take advice to do it how it could have been. So I'm just considering, is it already offensive to just try to avoid, you know, although it's temple, because how would I say, it's not, doesn't have an uplifting element for one's spiritual life. Although it's temple, is there something wrong with that attitude? Because at least in my case, I have come to the conclusion.
You have the aspect is that, you know, that determine I won't go to any temple because it's all Maya and all that. That's not good. They have the aspect that I want to be engaged in devotional service. And so those situations in which I can be nicely engaged and inspired, I'll do that. So by going to the temple, that's there. You do it. If by going to the temple, it's not, you're only avoiding it because it doesn't help. Like I can remember one time, you know, just this is just a funny example, but I remember in Vrindavan temple that you have the main entrance, and then on each side of the temple room, you have two small doors you can go in. You know, one in the middle and one right up next to the deities. And so then most devotees that were coming from other places and all this and that would tend to go in through the main entrance. Those who lived in Vrindavan, unless they were coming in from that side where you come in the main entrance, you know, you're coming from Prabhupada Samadhi or something, you go in the main. But if they were coming from, let's say, the guest house, you know, or the Gurukul, the tendency would be going to one of the side entrances. So I remember coming into the one just between Prabhupada's Vyasasan and the deities. So that was probably the least used door, you know, by anyone else. So you could come in, and from the door to where you could take darshan or Gorni Thai would be, I don't know, like 3, maximum 4 meters. 3 to 4 meters. So, you know, you just get in the door and you're right there. I have sometimes come through that. I've had it happen a few times, not many, but I've come through that door and I've got stopped by devotees that I'm even standing in front of the deities. But because they're on the, because I go in and I'll go right next to the wall, you know, where the thing is, so I can see the deities, and they'll come on this side and start talking to me. So when I come in, they'll catch me here. I move up. They're still talking, so you're looking at them. I actually have my back to the deities, and the whole darshan arti goes, and the deities close, and I never saw the deities. You know, so therefore, then on those occasions when there's so many people and people talking, then it's easier to come in the front one or the side one, and then stay at the back. So, you know, they talk to you, you can face the deities and say the deities, and they're sitting next to you and talking. You know, does that make sense? So you see what works. If by coming at this time, then it doesn't work out, you come at another time, you come in this situation, you adjust it to there. If no matter what you do, it doesn't work, yeah, then like you say, then you don't go. But in those temples that it does work, then you go. You know, just like, let's say in Mayapur, it's so big that generally you can always find some place where there's nobody. Nobody meaning someone who's going to talk and that and distract you. So you can generally find a place. You know, if you want to go up close and take darshan, then there'll be plenty of devotees. But you go all the way to the back, then generally there's very few back there that will distract you. So, you know, you find what's there. Or it's even like Panchatattva, you can take darshan of them out on the road. You know, before you go in the little gate that you go in where you then leave the shoes and that, you're out on the road, you can see them there and offer obeisances. Or you can come up to the temple, don't even go in the temple, stand out there and take darshan. Or you want to get inside a little bit, you just go into that veranda. You don't actually go through the doors and through the grills, then you can see. You can go to this side and see and go to that side. Same on Radha Madhava's side. You can be all the way out on the road, take darshan of Nrisingadev. You know, you can come into the courtyard of Garuda, see Nrisingadev, and go up to the doors outside, see Nrisingadev. But also, if you go to the other door, you can see Radha Madhava from an angle like that. So there are ways to get in and around that you want to get darshan. You follow those things, then you do that. Or come at another time when you know when no one's there. Like no one's there at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, there's no one there that's going to talk to you, you know, at darshan. So you go at that time, Hari Bol. You know, so you just work out what works for you. To have a mentality that I won't go to ISKCON temples, that will be not the point. Because the point is I want to do devotional service. Going to these temples, they simply distract my devotional service. So I want to do devotional service. I only go to those places where I can do devotional service. So one temple may be a distraction, another temple may not. Or one temple may be a distraction under certain, like, you know, like I said, Mayapur, Vrindavan, sometimes they're so busy, you miss the whole program because someone is talking. So you find other ways. If I know it's so busy, everyone's inside, like that. I would stand outside and take darshan, and you could see stand there the whole Arctic. No one's going to bother you. If you're outside, someone will walk past you. They'll go into the temple because they want to take darshan. You know, and you're standing over the side, so they have to walk all the way over. They figure, oh, he's going to come in. He's standing out here. Why? I don't know, but they don't think. They go in. When, as soon as he comes in, I'll catch him and talk. But you don't go in, so you just stand out there. So you find a way to make it work. But having the mentality, no, I won't associate with devotees. I won't do this. No, those devotees that it's a problem, I'll be careful of that. But if I see them or bump into them, I don't try to, you know, I won't avoid. Because therefore, it's also mentioned in the scriptures that one doesn't try to avoid devotees. Like you see somebody there, you don't then, you know, just walk off. No, you've seen, they acknowledge that you do. You interact, Hari Bol, Jantai, and walk on.
Thank you. It makes really good sense. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So you always look at it. The whole point of this part here that's being made, I mean, the whole Bhagavatam, but here, especially in this second chapter, you know, divinity and divine service, they're pointing out what is divinity, you know, because it's connected to Krishna. Divine service is that activity is connected with divinity. So looking at it from there, then you judge everything else. You don't judge from down. Oh, he's knowledgeable and renounced. Those are ornaments. You say, as a devotee, he's very knowledgeable. He's very renounced. Those are glories because he's a devotee. Therefore, they're glorious. But if they're not a devotee, then Prabhupada mentions like ornaments on a dead body. He's knowledgeable and he's detached, but he's not a devotee. So then what's the glory? You know, that's then the thing to see. Is that
hey, makes very much sense. You know.
Okay. It's
very best. Thank you so much.
Okay. Anything else, or we'll continue? No? Okay. So then Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to 1.7, right? Because this is all coming after the purport to 1.7. What was 1.7? Yeah. 1.7 was 6. Oh, here. The second. Bhakti yoga is the perfect and complete spiritual activity. And so one who is thus engaged automatically acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from this material world. Perfect and complete spiritual activity means it doesn't need any support from karma jnana, right? So when we say, oh, that's karma jnana, that means it's lacking devotion in that aspect, but that you're being detached and, let's say, fasting on a fast day, or you're studying the scriptures, you can't say, oh, that's karma jnana. No, it's devotional service. Devotional service is the source of karma jnana, not the other way around. It's because people cook, therefore there are kitchens, because people there are cooking, the laws governing cooking. Therefore, there are techniques, and those techniques have certain implements that you use. You use this kind of pot or pan or this other kind of, kitchen utensil because it does a particular thing. Because I want the vegetables to be small to cook quickly. Therefore, there are knives or other things to cut them up small. Right? That's how it works. So, but it's because there's cooking, therefore there's knives, and because there's a knife, there's a cutting board. Because cutting the knife on the counter is bad for the knife. So, yes, you need a sharp knife to cut, but how much I'll cut before the knife goes dull? But if I have a cutting board, then I can cut for much longer and without having to sharpen the knife. Right? And the cutting board needs something to sit on. Therefore, there's a counter or a floor or something like that. So it goes out, but it starts with cooking. And why are we cooking? To please Krishna. So in other words, from Krishna, I want to please him. What can I do to please Krishna? I have the ability to cook, or at this time of day, the appropriate thing is to cook. You know, and so then, and then to cook, I need, these ingredients and these utensils and these facilities. Therefore, those are there, and that's how it goes. It gets top down. It's not bottom up. So it's just a matter of time. We're conditioned to think bottom up, Right? Because even we, you know, we can say, no, I think, you know, descending knowledge I got, I went to university and the teachers taught me knowledge that's been coming down in the, you know, the Maletra Parampara and all that. But the point was, is that knowledge started from the person themselves and went out from there. So they're in a deductive method. They're giving you inductive knowledge. The knowledge is not deductive. The knowledge is inductive, though they're giving it to you in a dispensing it in a deductive way that then you will take it and apply it in an inductive way to yourself and, you know, to gain the knowledge. But deductive means it starts with Krishna. It starts with the scriptures. It starts with the acharyas, the devotee. It's coming down. Then it's we see ourselves in relation to that. Okay, I may see in the beginning because I don't know anything. I'm not the body, I'm the soul. Okay, and Krishna is God. And I have a relation with him. Okay, I'm part and parcel of him. I the nature of the soul is to serve. Okay, I've started myself, but now it's Krishna. Okay, so since I'm supposed to serve Krishna, I've gotten through that inductive up to there. Now, but I've heard it from the deductive. I've heard deductive knowledge delivered in a deductive way for an inductive mentality. So I can take it and go up from there, but it's been given to me. It's like I'm in the well, the rope comes down from the top. I'm not looking at the dirt under my feet in the dry well for the rope. And once I get the rope, then the rope, holding the rope will take me out. No, the rope comes down from above and I hold on to it. So it comes down to me. And I have to apply myself, then I get pulled out. So once we know that, then it's about Krishna. Then, okay, Krishna, and then how to deal with Krishna. So I'm servant of Krishna, so how do I serve Krishna? I don't know Krishna. I don't know what Krishna likes. But Krishna, the acharyas know. Krishna reveals in the scriptures. So then I follow what the acharyas and Krishna say about serving Krishna. And so that knowledge is deductive. I don't make up my, oh, times have changed. Oh, it's Kali Yuga. That's the popular one. It's Kali Yuga. You can't do these things. It's like, I think Vyasadeva wrote the scriptures down because it was Kali Yuga. So that's already the change. They're written instead of just they were spoken. That's already the change. Instead of being spoken, there might be, means the Puranas has 1 billion verses. Right? And so what's been given to us, what Vyasadeva documented, was the most important 400,000 verses. And of that, then he did the most important of that was the 18,000 verses. So if you know these 18,000, you actually understand how to apply and approach the 1 billion verses. So yes, it's Kali Yuga. That's why the essence, it's Kali Yuga. You can't sit and meditate. You can't do these big yajnas. You can't do this big elaborate deity worship like they did in other ages. Therefore, in this age, you chant the holy name and you perform, you know, some meditation, some sacrifice, you know, yajnas, you know, for various things and deity worship, you know, in a very essential way with the holy name being the essential part. Then you can do that. But yes, it's already been adjusted for Kali Yuga. It's not that we're the great, great, what do you call it? Great adjusters, you know, like that. No, it's already been adjusted for us. That's why the founder chart, he comes, when he says 10,000 years, it means the instructions he's given are valid and will work for 10,000 years. It means that's the golden age people take advantage. After that, things start to disappear. So the point is you can't say it's changed. We have to change Prabhupada's books and change everything and we can't do that. It's like, who are we? You know, who are we to say that? No, Krishna's already done that. He's advised it. He's told his acharyas. He sent his founder acharya. And so we just have to follow that. And when we become realized in it, yes, then we can start to, as we practice and appreciate and understand, you know, our doubts are cleared. We can help others clear their doubts. We understand. We can help other people understand. We realize we can help other people realize. And so, yes, then those activities are there. But the point is that it's those instructions and following these instructions that will make things function. So there's no such thing as, oh, it's Kali Yuga, you can't do all those things. It's kind of like, you know, it's like you say, oh, everything's changed, right? Oh, and people don't eat, right? They don't eat, sleep, mate, and defend. The animals do that. The protozoa do that. One-celled animals. Why did they have to, you know, go through all the trouble to become, you know, go from a one-celled animal into a, you know, multi-celled animal? Because up from protozoa, basically, then you have, what do you have from there? Then you're going to have, you know, fish and plants and stuff like that, right? There's no two-celled animals or three-celled or four-celled. No, there's one-celled and then there's, you know, complex organisms. It's really interesting like that. So the point is they didn't have to go through all that trouble to come up to be a human just so they could say, oh, this doesn't apply to us. You know, it's like that. No, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, they're still doing today like they have been for, you know, billions of years. So, yeah, no. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances. Was it me or was it not me?
I think you came second.
After. Okay, I'll wait.
Okay. Please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, what is the prerequisite to not cross that line between that we have to think on our own, have to think to apply this knowledge that we have heard, like I said, but then not get until we think so much on our own that we get we go away from that, we kind of deviate from that knowledge that we have received, and we start thinking, yeah, that we have to change books and things like that.
It's like what you just mentioned there, is that you're looking at it from always, you're contemplating in the context of, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So your analyzation of it can't stray away from the principles that they give. If it's not clear, so what's the principle behind it? Because that's the active point. See, is you're going to see it in a particular situation. But the point is those situations are always changing. So there's a principle at work that is something to be seen, something to be appreciated, right? That's the whole point. So one has to see that, no, this is what I have, there's a principle because I have to apply it in places outside of what happened to me. You know what I'm saying? Just like I gave example, it happened to me that going to the temple, I got caught and I didn't get to take darshan of the deities, though I was actually standing directly in front of the deities. I couldn't take darshan. Right? So, you know, I analyze what happened there and what that, but I have to analyze it in such a way that I can apply it to any situation. You know, it's not just coming in that door, it's any of the other doors or any of the other temples or any of the, you know, I have to see is what's the principle behind it. Now, either I have to ignore everybody. That's one solution. You see some devotees, they just won't talk to you when they go into the temple because they've had this happen a million times. So they're just not going to talk, you know, and then, you know, and here is that, you know, find a place where you don't have to not talk to them. Just they're not there. Or like I said, you go in between, you sit at the back of the temple. So if they do want to talk to you, you're facing the deities. So you can see the deities and you can talk. And if you're facing the deities, then, you know, I can talk to someone on their side. I can talk and look at the deities. But if they're behind me, I have to turn around to talk to them. Now my back's to the deities. And they're not thinking, well, he's trying to look at the deities. I'll come to the side. No, it's I have something important to say. I found the guy, I want to talk to him, and they're forgetting that they're in front of the deities and that you've come there to take darshan. So they expect you to turn around to talk to them rather than they'll come on the side and you can talk to them. So therefore, don't be in a situation where they can get behind you. It's just like you're in a fight. Keep your back to the wall. No one can get behind you. You know, so you find the principle. And so then it's always in context of Krishna consciousness, and you're always looking for the principle that you can always apply. Yeah? Does that work?
Yes, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I just have one question. Just want to say one thing regarding this 10,000 years, because I heard... Right. one conversation between Prabhupada and Allen Ginsberg.
Mm-hmm.
And Allen Ginsberg was pushing Prabhupada all the time. Yeah, what will happen after those 10,000 years? And Prabhupada said, yeah, but it's up to the people. It's not necessarily that Kali Yuga will start. So it was like pushing and pushing. Prabhupada was not bending. He was saying it depends on the people.
Right.
So it's, I just felt that when people say it's Kali Yuga, it's like they have already like given up.
Yes. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Because that's the point why Prabhupada's making. Because see, is people want to say it's because of the situation I had to do certain things. But it's actually their choice to do those things. Right? What was it? Someone told me the other day, that's a very nice quotation. Because this goes way back. I think this was somebody, this was talking to someone who had served in the armed forces, but it would have been back in time, like World War I, World War II, these kind of things. It was in a more modern time. And they were, you know, talking that when we were younger, then it was, you would look for people were looking for a noble cause to die for, right? Well, nowadays that they're only interested in themselves. It's not about any noble cause. It's just about what's good for me. But before it was like, I should do something noble and great. And so then because before it was like, you know, people would want to go and fight for the country or go and fight for a cause or go and fight for something because they had that sense of duty and all that. Nowadays, they don't even have a work ethic. They don't even want to work. Before, they were willing to find something they were willing to die for. And now it's like they would rather you just pay them and they just sit there, enjoy themselves and do nothing. You know, they don't have any self-worth. So the thing is people will say it's the situation. So here, the Kali Yuga becomes very bad like this and that. And those are the situations that will come up, but the choice is always the individual. So by saying that and then, and Lenny if he says, but they'll be doing this, but they're doing that now, so it's already happening. So is it the golden age and can we actually take up devotional service and all that? And, you know, so Prabhupada's point is no, you always have a choice and you can always be engaged. So to be engaged in Krishna service, that's something, a choice you can always make. It may not always be the choice you want. It's just like you're there. You go to take darshan of the deities, you can't. So then instead of being engaged in archanam, you're going to be engaged in smaranam. Because you can only remember the deities because you couldn't actually go and take darshan of the deities in archanam. So like that. So you'll find what activity you can do for Krishna. So it may just switch. So you wanted to do one, the situation wasn't there, you did another. But this way I went there and the situation was there, so then that's it. I went to go in for the festival, but they closed the main door because there were so many, outside guests coming and all that. And so then, you know, that's it. I'm not going in. But they do have the door on the side open for the devotees to go in. They just don't want the public, more a public to go in because they need certain devotees to get in to sit in that. And if there's more room, then they'll let open it again. So this idea is that, I'm forced by certain, it's Kali Yuga, so we can't do any of these devotional things. We're born in the West. We can't do anything of these, you know, traditional activities because we're Westerners, you know, it's against our nature and like that. So what is your nature? What do you do? Okay, you're a Westerner. You're born in the West, you're a Westerner. Okay, so what do you do? What does a Westerner eat? It's just whatever they like. You could like Indian food. You don't like Indian food, so that's why you say you can't eat it. You're not saying you can't eat Chinese food or Lebanese food, you know, or French food. You're not French. Why are you eating French food? You eat French fries. It's that every, you know, basically red-blooded American will eat French fries. They're French, and even they're in the name, French. You know, but they're eating them. It doesn't say American fries. You know? Like that. So the whole point is that you eat what you want. Okay, what time do you go to bed? Whenever you like. When do you get up? Whenever you like. What do you wear? Whatever you like. You know, what friends do you get? Who you like. So in other words, they want to say is whatever I feel like doing, that's all that can be done. No, that's you're just doing what you want to do. Do you want to elevate your consciousness? Or you want to elevate your consciousness? Then yes, you have to adjust. So that's the point, is that they're saying this just to say, oh, it's circumstantial, we can do nothing about it. When it's no, you can do everything about it, right? People learn martial arts. Where's the martial arts from? Right? Are they learning how to, they're in America, are they learning how to throw a tomahawk? Is that what they're learning? You know, or you're in Europe, okay, how to use a broadsword or a battle axe, you know, those big axes, or a hammer. I think in the up north it was very, very, very popular, the hammer. It had, because they were such big guys, they could carry one of these 5 kilo hammers and kill people with it. And for them it was like, you know, taking a piece of grass and like that. So is that what they're learning? No, they're learning something from beyond India. I mean, they can't even go, India is closer than China or Japan, but they can learn that, but they can't learn something that's closer because it's too far away. You know? So that's the thing, is that no, it's when they say we're Westerners, we can't do all those things. All they're saying is, as a Westerner, there is no culture, there is no regulation, there is no standards. The standard is whatever I like, whenever I like, however I like, with whoever I like. You know, that's the standard, and so I don't want to do that. So therefore, then how can you say that I should do these things? But then that's fine. Then say, okay. So then say, my background in that is I'm a lechon yavana. I am too sinful and low class to follow human culture, because the India means, the Vedic means human culture. Just say I'm subhuman. I'm too low class, too fallen, too disgusting to be engaged in human activities. And don't say no, but it's all equal. In fact, it's better because we're up to date and modern. It's better than Indian, because it always comes out to be prestige. They want to do nothing and have the prestige of someone who is doing something. I will do nothing on devotional service, whatever I feel, but I should get the same respect as someone who is doing devotional service. So it's bogus. You have to see it in line with Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. You know, you have to see it that it's Krishna's Kali Yuga, it's not ours. And the modes of nature make it go. It means you go back a few months, everybody was so far left, it was insane. Things are falling apart. Then one thing like that, and it changes and it starts going towards the right. That's the modes of nature. That's not them. Modes of nature make that happen. You know, like we had before, you go back 100 years, the roaring 20s, they were absolutely insane. Like sense gratification, completely nuts. And then when the 30s hit and the depression and all that, then people started to become more conservative, more religious, more everything like that. It's just the modes. So thinking, saying that, oh, it's Kali Yuga and this and that, then, you know, why is it even the guy who made the atomic bomb, when it went off the first time, he quoted Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna says he's the destroyers of the world. He was saying, this is so great. This is God's power. It's not because I tinkered with some things. We may have figured out how to unleash it, but what we've unleashed, the atomic power, is God's power. And he quoted Bhagavad Gita. And then to say, oh, you can't do all these things. It's foolishness. It's something foolish being spoken to fools. That's all. The uninformed. That's what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada says it nicely. Poor fund of knowledge. You know, just means how much knowledge they have is not enough. But then they claim that they're very, you know, armchair speculators. And, you know, he has nice terms to say that they're foolish. Yes.
Maharaj, also that when one is saying, oh, it's Kali Yuga, so, but Prabhupada is also saying that we are not fatalistic. So does that must belong to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that which is not fatalistic, although we believe in karma, but still there is the free will. So
free will is what you're dealing with. You can't do anything about predestiny.
Yeah.
Right? You can deal with free will. You can't deal with predestiny.
Yeah.
You know, you can apply your free will to the predestiny. So yeah, we're not fatalists, because fatalism is the mode of ignorance. Oh, it's all finished. It's all destroyed. There's nothing we can do. It's just feeling sorry for yourself. It's just the mode of ignorance. That's all. You can't do anything and all that. Okay. So then, you know, so today you did nothing. You just sat in bed, and all I can do if I get out of bed and something happened, I can't do anything. You just laid in bed. So why are you out here? Why did you pick those clothes? Why are you wearing those particular shoes, those particular pants, that particular shirt? You have your hairstyle done in this particular way. You know, you've chosen this particular, you know, activity, or you're doing, you're walking on this particular. Why? You chose that. Oh, there's no other thing available. It's like that. So then, if you're so controlled, then don't you want to then follow someone who is independent, who is free? So Prabhupada's independent. He's free. He's not, so follow him. Since you can't do it, follow Prabhupada. You know, this whole thing is, oh, like that, because in the end of the day, they just do whatever they want. So they're saying, oh, we can't do anything. We're controlled by situation. And then they do exactly what they want to do. So it's just an excuse to not do, you know, duties, but to just do what you feel like. So in other words, instead of using the intelligence to define their life, they just use their mind. And that's an animal. An animal just works on, an animal doesn't look at intelligence. You know, the cat doesn't go, well, I'm a cat, so I can only do cat stuff. And I got claws, so therefore I can't hold a spoon and, you know, drink soup nicely, you know, like that. And I can't use a fork, so I can't eat the salad like that. So I only got claws. So the only thing to do for me is to go and catch birds or mice. So, you know, what to do? You know, that's the way it is, you know. But they're not, you know, they don't think about that. They don't do that. They just see a mouse, they run after it. They see a bird, they jump after it. They don't think. So that's the point, is that they just feel. So if we're going to bring it down to, it's all how I feel, and this one feels, and all that one feels, and he feels like this and that, and oh, he's a bad person, he must feel like this and feel like that. That's all that they're dealing with, is just feelings. That's animal life. It's not even subhuman. They want to present it, because if I present it like this animal, it sounds bad. If I present it as pranamoy, that, oh, but you know, it's for everybody, everybody will be happy. But how will everybody be happy? Everybody doesn't want to do what you're wanting to do. Like the hippies are thinking, oh, if everyone just had loved and all this, but does everyone want to live on that commune? No. So therefore, how will everybody be happy? You know? So it doesn't work. They have to follow Krishna consciousness, God consciousness. That's the only thing that will bring it all together and make it balanced.
I will say that it is a philosophical deviation.
I would say it's a philosophical misunderstanding. If they make it into a philosophy and preach it and stuff like that, and it's something to argue, then you can say, yes, that's a deviation. But if it's just a misunderstanding, a devotee's heard something or, you know, thought and came up with a misleading understanding, then it's just, it's the wrong understanding. So, because the point is it's just, if you correct it, then they move forward in devotional service. But if they're attached to it, and, you know, in other words, if it's that hill they're willing to die on, then you can see it may be a deviation.
Jai, thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay. Jai ho. So I think the time is up. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samaveta Bhaktarindaki Jai Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
Okay.